so many people now are broken. They're just metabolically broken, meaning they have to eat energy because they're hyperinsulinemic. We call it metabolic syndrome. It's 80%+ of the adult population. They cannot use fat for fuel. And that's a diseased state.
When this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious shit.
And that is the story of human progress.
1 inch at a time.
I'm your host, Joe DiStefano, and you're listening to Stack. In today's episode, I chat with Lieutenant Colonel Mark Cugazella, MD, a professor at West Virginia University School of Medicine. He's also in charge of the U.S. Air Force Efficient Running Project and has presented running workshops on over 50 military bases across the country. He's been a national-level runner for over 35 years with more than 100 marathon and ultramarathon finishes to his name. He's won the Air Force Marathon twice and has a marathon PR of 2 hours and 24 minutes, which, if you know running, you know that's a world-class time. Mark is a total stud on 2 feet. His innovative work and his story have been featured in the New York Times, NPR, Outside Magazine, Runner's World, Washington Post, JAMA, and many other medical and media outlets. I was very fortunate to meet Dr. Mark about 5 years ago, not shockingly, at a running workshop that he was instructing nearby my house that I heard about and I ran over to. I immediately loved how he thought and the areas of health that he focused on while he taught us about running more safely. Immediately, I saw him as a total health guru disguised as an incredible runner. In fact, his book, which I highly recommend and I'll link to in the show notes, is called Run for Your Life. And it's exactly this. It's a health book disguised as a running book. And even if you have no intentions of ever running, there are dozens of wildly valuable lessons for you waiting in those pages. We begin this conversation with a simple question, but one that a surprising number of doctors and medical professionals will fail to answer as clearly, succinctly, and as simply as Dr. Mark does. The question is, what is health? This question leads to a brilliant conversation around obesity, around protein, quality protein, what it is, why we need it, how Dr. Mark knew the most recent government-led initiative to combat childhood obesity was doomed before it even began, and what Mark would do to combat the current health crisis if it were all up to him. We sneak in a few words about running and a few words about macronutrients that he recommends for patients with metabolic health problems or athletes. And as you hear this show, it's going to become very clear why we get along so well. As always, guys, please share the show around your networks. You can text it to a friend by sending them the link over at coachjoedi.com/123. That's where you're going to find the show notes where we link to Mark's websites and some of his writing and some of the research papers he references in today's show. And of course, there are links to this podcast on every major platform on that lander as well. This show was a whole lot of fun and is without question going to be one of at least two podcasts with Dr. Mark. We were in a little bit of a time crunch and we could have chatted for many, many more hours, I assure you. And before we dive into the show, one of the things that Dr. Mark mentions about protein is the role that it plays in bone health and keeping our bones sturdy and strong as we age. Well, collagen is the protein-rich glue that helps our bones and joints stay together. And it's really only found in the connective tissues of animals and ancestral foods, of course, like bone broth. In fact, the whole point of bone broth is to extract the vital amino acids that we cannot easily consume in solid state. So there's just one major problem. When it comes to collagen and consuming the connective tissues of animals, quality is everything. Have you ever done the egg test? Buy the cheapest gas station eggs that you possibly can find. Then buy the best, most local, organic, free-range, bug-eating chicken eggs you can find. Check out the difference in shell hardness. It's massive. The gas station egg, you flick it with your finger, the eggshell is going to crack. But that local, organic, free-range, bug-eating chicken egg, you can probably drop on your countertop and it probably won't even break. That is the importance of a healthy bird or a healthy animal. And if we consume those gas station eggs, let us not trick ourselves into thinking those two things are the same. And since collagen is an absolutely booming business these days, companies are sourcing the cheapest, lowest grade conventionally raised collagens they can. Oftentimes, these collagens are coming from useless parts of the animal, like the hooves and the horns, that would otherwise just go to waste, rather than areas such as the trachea and the scapula. And on top of that, the processing required to use those more junk parts of the animal requires such high heat that any beneficial agents and acids that are in there are going to be completely destroyed. We evolved to eat minimally processed, living collagens from the most cartilaginous parts of a healthy, robust grass-grazing animals possible. And the only place I know of to find truly living collagen is from my good friends over at Ancestral Supplements. Ancestral Supplements makes targeted New Zealand-sourced nose-to-tail foods and living collagen in simple, convenient gelatin capsules. I even recently started taking a few of these living collagen capsules right before bed and noticed a huge difference in my sleep because the glycine is so healing to the gut, and gut stuff is brain stuff, and brain stuff keeps you up at night. Anyway, not only do Ancestral Supplements bring us the best quality foods, but they have a simple all-natural protease enzyme extraction process with minimal heat to remove the non-cartilage material from the foods that they're creating for us, and then they freeze-dry the result. That's it, hence the term living collagen. And such, this collagen retains all of the ancestral properties in a whole food matrix that are otherwise absent in the modern world. For more, visit ancestralsupplements.com or coachjodi.com/ancestral if you'd like a special discount on ancestral living collagen. And since Dr. Mark also chats a lot about sugar on this show and how maintaining healthy blood glucose levels are one of the most important factors in us living a long, healthy, unmedicated, and active life, I wanted to tell you about a hack I use that supports blood glucose regulation, makes intermittent fasting a breeze, and rapidly helps us burn our own fat for fuel, which Dr. Mark explains is a big part of his definition of health. So if you love this episode and you want to start paying more attention to your body's ability to run on something other than sugar, you may want to check out this awesome biohack called AMPK Charge. AMPK Charge helps you tap into the benefits of intermittent fasting and carb restriction with or without fasting protocols. AMPK Charge helps activate the AMPK pathway, which is critical for fat breakdown, energy production, and healthy aging. Taking it before a fasted morning workout, as I often do, helps your body dip into fat stores more easily than as if you just rolled out of bed and started training in a more naturally fasted state. So it's like a supercharger for your metabolism. In fact, the incredibly bioavailable blend of DIM, quercetin, milk thistle, resveratrol, berberine, and cinnamon is safe to take every day and complements intermittent fasting, keto, and carb-restricted diets. And because, like all Quiksilver products, AMPK Charge is packed in ultra-small nanoliposomes, the nutrients are protected from premature breakdown by digestive acids and rapidly facilitate maximal intracellular delivery. In fact, the liposomes are so small, they're half as small as many of the other leading liposomal products on the market, they begin absorbing as soon as they hit your mouth. So if you're looking to boost your ability to listen to all of Mark's advice on today's show, head on over to coachjodi.com/AMPK, all lowercase. For some reason, my website's case sensitive all of a sudden. So it's coachjodi.com/AMPK, all lowercase. And find all the info on AMPK Charge plus a very special discount code only for my listeners. All right, guys, now let's run for our lives with Dr. Mark Cucuzella. I went back to your book that you sent me about, is it 3 years ago now? Yeah. Run for Your Life. Phenomenal. Just unbelievably good book. A book that covers just about everything. I just sent it around to some of my clients that weren't my clients then. And you cover so much. And I think that one of the really cool places that I think that we could start this discussion, and then if it goes to fuel, it goes to nutrition, it goes to immunity, it goes to running, it goes to breathing, we'll see. But Dr. Mark, what is health?
Yeah, so health is, I mean, the World Health Organization describes it as kind of a condition of you know, not just lack of disease, but of complete, you know, psychological, emotional, and physical well-being. So I think in medicine, you know, we look at, you know, you do all your labs and absence of disease, you know, okay, you're well, but most people are just not well. So health, and really, I think you can look at some of the metabolic simplicities of it, Joe. So can a body use its own fat as fuel? You know, so a healthy human being, you know, we can use glucose when we need to, but when we don't need to, we can actually make energy from our own cells, right? So we can, and this is irregardless of weight loss, whether you're a CrossFitter or a runner, a non-exerciser, you're just a human on the planet. And can you use your own body fat as fuel? Meaning you eat dinner at night, you don't snack, you can go to bed, not wake up in the middle of the night, wake up, maybe take the dog for a walk. If you're a farmer, maybe go milk the cows or get the chicken eggs, then come back for breakfast. You know, you're at that point of the day, you're using energy from your body, and then you go eat some energy. But so many people now are broken. They're just metabolically broken, meaning they have to eat energy because they're hyperinsulinemic. We call it metabolic syndrome. It's 80%+ of the adult population. They cannot use fat for fuel. And that's a diseased state. So maybe that's kind of a little of the medical side, but you know, the brain and just your psychological well-being is with COVID, I think, true. I mean, look at all the stress people have been under, kids, and you know, you could say their labs are fine, but that poor kid looking at a two-dimensional screen for 12 months, you know, I don't think a lot of them aren't doing too well right now. So,
right. No.
Emotional. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's, you know, and that's my kind of concern as well, is, you know, are we sort of with this whole thing, and everyone has their own kind of perspective of health and wellness and well-being and fitness and performance and longevity. And with everyone having more or less a different opinion of what it means to be healthy, of course, it's hard to move 7 billion people towards a singular definition of health. And but that disease state, you know, it's interesting too, because I think that is just such a simplistic definition. And ultimately, you know, wasn't it Einstein, like, you know, make something as simple as it can possibly be? Can you use your own fat as fuel?
And yeah, not one bit simpler. Yeah, there is a limit.
Right. And I think so many of us were on this pursuit of living as long as we possibly can. But I think in a lot of cases we're padding that, right? So we're kind of there are problems along the way, but as long as there's a, you know, as long as my heart is beating, it's like my dad, you know, he had a pacemaker for the last decade of his life and it was supposed to last 10 years, but he had to get it replaced every couple of years because it was doing 100% of the work. And so there's this component of health that doesn't just mean how long are you going to live, but you know, what can you do with that life? Right. And I know that you're kind of, I think we're speaking the same language on that.
Yeah, and you can look at the stats, you know, in the literature, they call it disease-associated life expectancy, you know, which is how long do you live without being diseased? And you know, we suck, you know, to use the medical terminology in America. You know, we're like number 45 on the world scale for that. You know, and as far as life expectancy, you think, oh, we're pretty good. That's just how long do you live? You know, you could be in a state of illness for 30 years. And we're in like the 30s there. You know, so I mean, there are developing countries that are live longer than us. But certainly when it comes to the breadth of life, you know, which is how long do you live well and can get yourself up off the floor without an assistant, you know, we're really poor there. And then when you look at cost of care in our country, we're like 3x any other developed country. So clearly we're not getting good bang for the buck here. And, you know, there's many causes of that. There's not just one specific root cause, but so clearly we're failing. And, you know, and there was a really good article out of the UK last week, Joe, which described nutritional policy, you know, since 1992. And there's been like 15 different initiatives, you know, to address obesity, you know, and none of them have worked, because you see the curves keeps, but it was a very insightful article, because we don't learn from what didn't work. You know, you come in, you got some new idea, you rehash an old idea that didn't work, and clearly it's not going to work. But you know, why is this happening? So you need to, I kind of, when I talk to people about what's it going to take, and I say, well, I don't know, but you know, we made a coronavirus vaccine in 6 months. You know, not we, like I had anything to do with that. But the, you know, they brought all the best and brightest scientists into the room, paid them whatever it took to pull it off, and you're not going to leave the room until you figure this out. You know, and that's Manhattan Project level thinking too. So if anyone listening knows what that project was, that was building the bomb at the, you know, middle portion of World War II. You know, it was about a 3-year lockdown of the brightest scientists on the planet, you know, came to Alamosa, and they are not leaving until they figure this out. You know, so here we kind of like one off a little, let's, you know, promote this or promote that or make a new plate. It was a pyramid. It's a plate. I think that's a good idea. And you look at, you know, maybe tell kids just to eat more fruits and vegetables and then it'll all magically work out, you know, but like every time we do these, you know, Michelle Obama, God bless her soul, you know, she really did have her heart in the game and wanted to address childhood obesity. But clearly she didn't talk to the right scientists. She was influenced by a lot of people who had industry influences, and it was called Let's Move. And, you know, you're sitting back, and you and I are, we love moving, right? This is our life, right? You know, you move heavier things than I do, but you know, maybe I can move longer distances.
That's for sure.
End of the day, we both like to move, and no one's denying that that's not an important thing for kids, but really that does not have much to do with obesity. And that's what the program was called. And when I heard that name come out, I was like, this ain't going to work. Because unless you get at the industry that's creating the obesity and make policy related to that industry, not, you know, a poster on a wall telling kids to do something. I mean, you gotta, if a toxin's in the environment, you got to remove it, or else you can't leave it up to personal choice. But we have to figure. I don't have all the answers. Jeez, yeah. If I did, you know, wouldn't be here. But I know what we're doing now is not working. And I've testified on the Senate floor twice about this for the Dietary Guidelines Commissions, and clearly not much changes. So right. On we go. So take care of yourself one at a time, right? Coach people and
right.
Try to help them sort out their own issues.
Yeah, and I totally agree. Yeah. And you know, back in my Spartan days, you know, we were trying to do a lot with kids and. I actually spoke at one of Michelle Obama's events in DC, and again, like very well-intentioned and everyone's hearts are in the right place. But when I would walk through the expo floor, I would say more than 50% of the, displays and products and services, they were actually attacking meat. About half of them were referring to meat in a negative way. Red meat is doing this, is a big part of the issue. So there was as much, it was almost, you know, is putting the calories in, calories out piece in play as it demonized, I believe, what you and I feel are some of the most healthy, nutrient-dense foods on the planet.
The most nutrient-dense foods, you know, this isn't a bias or an opinion. If you look at quality protein, you know, so let's look at what you're a human. You're not a plant, right? So you are a human, and we
most
need
of the
non-essential amino acids most of the time. Yeah, you're a guy, right? Sometimes we behave subhuman, but that's when we're out on the race course. You know, you get a little ugly and have some fun.
Yeah,
but yeah, we have. You know, there's a dietary amino acid scale. You know, based on a quality of food. You know, we're greater than one is you know top shelf, and below one is lower shelf, meaning it's not a complete protein. You know, so if you want to have all the essential amino acids, the animal products have all the essential amino acids, right? 9 essential amino acids is higher quality protein. And we need protein. You know, protein is really, you know, probably the leverage on appetite. You know, if you look at the most satiating macronutrient, like if someone is hungry, they're going to eat, right? If a kid is hungry, they're going to eat. So if their diet is protein poor, carb high, and fat high, meaning if carbs and fat in the same meal, meaning the carbs raise the insulin and then you have all the crap fats, they will store that. That's how you break people. But no, the animal products, zero carbohydrate, super nutrient dense, in their natural form. Don't skim them, just have them the way they are. Eggs, meats, cheese, butter, fish. But there's a whole industry you know, I'm not a conspiracy theory person, but there's huge conflicts of interest and marketing. And, you know, look at what a Beyond Burger is compared to a real burger. Right. You know, how many ingredients are in a Beyond Burger, and what's the environmental impact of manufacturing something that's supposed to be meat? You know, so I disagree that that's more healthy than meat. Now, if you do have a religious reason, you know, some ethical reason you don't want to eat meat, that's fine. I see people in my clinic that don't want to eat meat, and that's fine. I'll work with them. You know, if they're diabetic, you know, they need to get off the carbohydrates. So we'll look at, you know, low carb foods that are plant-based, and maybe if we can convince them to have eggs and cheese, you know, the egg is the perfect food. So if someone that doesn't want to eat animal products, you know, meat, would eat eggs, they're good, because the egg is a chicken, right? It really is. It will become a chicken.
Yeah.
So if you're stuck on an island, right, if you think about this, you're on an island and you have one food source to survive until that raft comes and gets you, you know, an egg would be the one. It would have all the essential fatty acids and all the essential amino acids. You know, maybe eat a tree leaf every now and then, but that's your high quality protein. It's going to make you full. It's going to give you what you need. You know, so, you know, those people don't share any evidence of what they have is healthy for a human. You know, there was a neat Lancet report, and I wrote a long blog on it in 2019, which had massive funding from all of these industry leads and plant-based foods. And yeah, it was nonsensical, but they're pushing this out as the new dietary diet. I mean, the planetary diet, you know, this is going to reduce greenhouse gases. And as the leaders of that are flying around the globe in their private plane, it was crazy how that was published, you know, and what they were looking at for environmental impact, you know, like, okay, the cow is raising methane or something. But in the scope of things, you know, transportation, I mean, if I'm going to take a tomato, I live in rural West Virginia, and most of my state shops at a dollar store, right? I'm not making that up, right? We're a food insecure state. And if I'm going to bring a tomato from Central America to the dollar store in Central West Virginia, you know, there's a huge environmental impact there. Plus, it's probably not going to be tasty by the time it gets there, and it might end up in the trash. So we have to try to look locally to what's the best solution for a local population on where they can shop. So certainly, you know, if you're just over in Europe, right, and you eat seasonally in the market season, like no one goes to, you just walk down your block and what came out of someone's garden that day is on your plate that night. That's the perfect way to be. But, you know, for many of us in the real world, that's not the way it is. So yeah, so that's disturbing to hear that, because huge conflicts of interest with these groups that want to push out animal products as being, quote, bad for your health, as diabetes is rampaging, you know, the human health right now.
Yeah, it's truly mind-blowing. And I could take this a lot of ways, but I think the one thing I'll say about West Virginia, I've been there quite a few times for whether it was races or other things, and it's so beautiful. I imagine you guys, you know, there's got to be some incredible community gardens, hopefully, or at least private family gardens.
Great farmer markets.
Just unbelievable. Yeah. So I think it's an interesting piece there.
And we have a program, Joe, that doubles SNAP at farmer markets. I've been a lead on a grant now at year six. So we double, if you have SNAP, which is a food stamp EBT card, you can take it to our farmer markets seasonally and you get double your dollars. So you can swipe. So I'm all for all the plants and the farm. So you take $20 off of your EBT card and you get $40 of market bucks, and you walk around the market and you fill up your bag with like delicious produce, not something that's been shipped up in a box. It's wonderful to see people learn how to eat that stuff.
Imagine if that was our COVID recovery plan, right? You know,
oh gosh, yeah. It helps local farmers, helps local markets. People get to learn. They talk to the farmer. What do you do with this thing that looks like a plant, a leaf, right? They don't know a chard from a kale, but they learn, right? Or just do this with it, which is really cool. I don't know what to do with any of those things. Just ask the farmer.
Well, hey,
some olive oil on it, saute it up. It's delicious.
Well,
add some salt.
It's important to ask the farmer, because I went to a farmer's market a bunch of years ago, probably around the time you and I met. And I was like, wow, these look interesting. Went home. In the car, I just start eating them. They're fiddlehead ferns. I got so sick that night. I had eaten a bunch of raw fiddleheads that you have to cook these things. You know, fiddleheads, you don't cook them. You get seriously ill. They grow in like swamps, you know, it's like just awful. One thing I just didn't want to go past. There's so much here to unpack. And one thing I wanted to mention is I was looking at somebody I know was starting like a protein powder business or something. And he showed me the, you know, whatever channel he was going through, whatever company was fulfilling his orders and formulating his products. And grass-fed whey protein was, I think they were buying per kilo, was something like $32 a kilo. Pea protein was $8 or $9 a kilo. Mm-hmm. Yet when I go into the store, the Beyond and the Impossibles, they're actually more than grass-fed beef in terms of cost per pound, which to me, if we're trying to do this whole thing and we're doing this for the planet or for our health, it seems like we would create a scenario. Why is the pea, how could it possibly become more expensive than grass-fed beef that has a shelf life of a week? And I would love your take on that. But the other piece I wanted to mention, just because I think it's relevant to a lot of our audience, you mentioned high carb, high fat concurrent with low protein is how you break people. And when we look at diets around the world, like the Okinawans as an example, is high carb, but it's pretty low fat. It's one of the, you know, it's one of the areas of the world that the Blue Zone folks point to and say, this is why we should be plant-based. But I think now with intermittent fasting, with fatty coffees, with the fat craze, the focus on fat-soluble nutrients in a lot of circles that you and I frequent, I think there's a lot of people that were potentially vegan that have actually upped their fat, but their protein's probably still low. So there's probably a lot of vegans out there, or plant-rich paleo, which is how we refer to it at Ranga, plant-rich paleo. There's probably a lot of people out there that are actually in that zone of concurrent high-carb, high-fat, eating very high-quality food.
Diabetic, type 2 diabetic vegetarians. And certainly we see a lot of people who decide to add some animal products back, and they, as long as they understand their metabolism,
right,
you know, there aren't healthy foods, there's healthy people, you know, so there's not a specific like diet for health. It's what does that diet do to you? But yeah, so I mean, to put it kind of simply, so you have to look at two different phenotypes of people, you know, meaning how are your genes expressed? So if you go to a Spartan race, you know, the beast, most of these people are insulin sensitive, right? Their bodies are healthy. Okay, they can go ahead and, you know, have 12 craft beers after the run, right? And they're fine, right? So if you look at the human bloodstream, so I've got a glucose monitor on my arm now, and I can scan it and I can see what it is. You know, it says, look, straight 100 milligrams per deciliter. Okay, so that's the concentration of glucose in my bloodstream, 100 milligrams per deciliter, and I've got 5 liters of plasma volume. So I've got 5 grams of glucose in my bloodstream, tightly regulated by insulin. That's one teaspoon.
Yeah, that's an important
note.
Okay,
so now you take that. It's really important.
5 grams of carbs in your entire bloodstream.
Not at your liver and your muscles also contain some. But when you become diabetic, actually, you have difficulty accessing those. But let's just look at the bloodstream and how you package what you eat. So the Spartan racer does the beast, just lights it up, comes back and has pizza and beer. You know, that's probably 40 teaspoons of sugar, easily, you know, 200 grams of carbs, probably more. But they're insulin sensitive, so their glucose goes up a little bit, insulin goes up a little bit, knocks on the door of the muscle and liver, and they store that carbohydrate for tomorrow's workout. They're well, life is good. Then you have the rest of the world, you know, the other 90%, that things don't work that way. You know, hormonally, they're different, right? Manopause, menopause, sedentary lifestyle, genetics catch up, a lot of sweet drinks. So the liver and muscles are full. That's where it starts. Your liver is already overstuffed. Now you throw 30 teaspoons of sugar in your bloodstream. The average American now has 300 grams of carbohydrates a day. 300 grams of carbohydrates a day. Now, your liver at max can store about 100 gram of carbohydrates in a well state, right? So a healthy you, Joe, can store it, right? When you read about like carbo loading, your liver can, you know, handle about 400 calories, right? 4 grams. So then your muscles can store some glycogen. And, you know, if you've got a lot of muscle mass, you might be able to store 1,000 calories in your muscle. You know, that's why people bonk if they don't burn fat. So, okay, so now you throw that into the system, And insulin's going to do its job to store it. But if you're resistant and you throw 40 teaspoons in, and your insulin's going to crank to clear it, what has to happen to that insulin?
You try harder to put it back, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to do whatever it takes to clear the bloodstream, and your muscles and liver say no room in the inn. So where does it go? It goes into the belly. So that's the people that we see in our clinics and hospitals and in the hospitals with COVID. So that the glucose doesn't process in the same way as a well person. So if you're a well person, you know, there are a lot of well people giving advice to otherwise well people, and it works for them and they're fine. But when the well person gives the advice that they would give to a well person to a metabolically broken person, it doesn't work. And that's where the confusion hits. You know, so, I mean, in Okinawa, they are not true. They're not like plant-based. If you actually kind of read about what they eat a ton of pork. So, you know, this mythological what they do that's written in Dan Buettner's book, I mean, that was just a survey. It's not a scientific report.
Right.
You know, in the National Geographic article, there's a boy carrying a lamb. You know, and I don't think like that lamb is just the kid's pet for life. Ultimately, it becomes dinner.
Yeah.
You know, so animal products are on the table in these, other than the true SDAs, but I think about a third of SDA, Seventh-day Adventists, that was Loma Linda was one of the places read about, actually eat meat. So it's not science. So you can't, and it's not just a diet, right? You know, you've traveled the world. You go to these places where people live long and they're not stressed out. You know, they're like hanging out in the town square with bocce balls, you know, the walking, and they don't eat junk food, you know? So common thread is get rid of junk food.
Right.
You know, whether, so if you're super healthy, natural food, low fat, and a lot of, you know, like the Hazda, for example, you know, Herman Ponzer just wrote a book on them. Yeah, there's a lot of carbs in their diet, but they're well. I mean, they look ripped, right?
Right.
These are well people. They can tolerate carbohydrates, but it's junk fat and junk carbs at the same meal in someone who's heading toward that insulin resistance. Because what happens in that scenario, so this would be like a frappuccino, yeah. Loaded with, right? Yeah, you can just drink your way there. Or like one of those packaged muffins at the airport. Okay, so it's got like 60 to 70 grams of carbs, and then it's got like 50 grams of fat.
Canola
like
just oil.
Loaded
yeah.
Oil.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the carbs go up, raise the insulin, and then you have the fat calories too, and then it tastes delicious to your brain. So all of that is being stored.
Right.
But if you just had a hard-boiled egg, two hard-boiled eggs, four hard-boiled eggs, you know, no carbohydrates, fat and protein, how many of them could you eat? Your insulin wouldn't go up, and it'd be almost impossible to gain any body fat, you know, on that way of eating. So that's kind of simplifies. But yeah, the fat and carb together is the full catastrophe. Low protein. Protein is the most for people out there. So why do we just – why do people who don't – you know, have income, just thrive on the carbs and the fat because it's dirt cheap. You know, if you go to your local dollar store, you could get a 99-cent soda, or you could get a bottle of corn oil for 99 cents, but the protein costs more. And so we have to look at that at a policy level, because if people buy the cheap fats and the cheap carbs but can't afford protein, they're going to get sick.
Right.
And we have to help them. It's not people's fault. You know, we really need to help people understand this.
Right. But demonizing protein and meats to those, and cholesterol,
yeah, I don't know why
to
you
those
demonize
same people.
The human foods that kept, yeah, that helped us get to the top of the food chain, right. You know, really.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, read evolutionary biology. Everyone should read that. And there's something that made our brain grow that, you know, this high quality protein,
right,
had something to do with. So,
right.
But I eat a ton of plants, you know, so I'm not, you know, like you, I eat a plant-rich diet, right, and then I just throw protein on top.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, my wife's vegan. I'll, you know, and by the way, she takes a lot of like ancestral supplements and things like that. So she's,
yeah,
you know, she's
correctly
99% vegan, but she's got, you know, 3 ounces a week of beef liver. You know, it's like, you know, that kind,
yeah,
of.
Yeah, so
it's
she's really not,
right,
biologically, you,
right,
know, she has a reason she doesn't want to eat the meat, but it's fine doing the supplement. Yeah, so she's getting those essential fatty acids, B vitamins, B12. Yeah, you got to supplement smart.
Totally.
And she's probably not insulin resistant. So, you know, you can eat a higher carb vegetarian diet if you're not broken.
Right, right, right. Absolutely.
The plant protein comes with more carbohydrate. I mean, that's just the way it is, other than maybe pure soy product or something like that.
Right, right.
But beans come with carbs and nuts come with carbs.
That was always the craziest argument to me, the rice and beans thing. It's like, yeah, but you got to eat like 100 grams of carbohydrate to get like any protein at all.
If you have a glucose monitor and you're diabetic, it'll just blow up. Right. Seriously, I've got dozens of patients with monitors. And, oh, wow, those beans just blew my sugar up. It's like,
right, yep. Right. One of the things, and bringing it back to movement, because of course you and I are both big fans of movement. It's not that we don't love the nutrition and the movement side, but maybe they're not quite as it's not exactly the seesaw that we were led to believe that, you know, you can eat the pizza and the ice cream as long as you run the beast. You know, if you run the beast, you can do this. So there's this whole thing. But getting back to movement, you had an interesting point in your book, just talking about, you had a whole section on sitting. And specifically just how sitting actually not only changes the postures, but actually reduces some of the enzymatic, some of the enzymatic processes that actually help us pull triglycerides and things out of circulation. Can you dive into a little bit of that?
Yeah, so gravity is really what's important. You know, so if we're in a zero G environment, the body will send signals to just shut things down. You know, because it's always in our body wants to conserve energy at all costs. Right. And so I'm standing now and, you know, I can move around, but, you know, I don't think the sitting is the new smoking is probably a little bit of an exaggeration because what are you doing in this off time? But I think it's, you know, just something to think about. But yeah, so if you're not getting gravity on your body, you're not sending signals to your bone and your muscle that, hey, we're awake, we're here. And we learned all this stuff early from astronauts, you know, 1 week in space, unless they were doing some pretty hardcore self-inflicted resistance in a zero G, they came back and they couldn't bear weight, right? They just in 1 week, you know, the muscles were just completely atrophy. So it's kind of scary. Maybe have you ever broken anything, Joe, in all of your hurdles and climbing over walls, like, you know, ended up with something in a cast?
Just my skull.
Just your skull. So maybe there was some shrinkage there. So maybe you got some Spartan warriors here, you know, that broke, you know, I think forearm is a pretty common fracture, you know.
Outstretched arm. Yeah. I've separated everything. I've been in a sling quite a bit. Yeah. I've separated my collarbones, dislocated my shoulders, but never my bones don't break except my skull. That was the one I broke.
Ouch! That's not you're lucky.
Cracked
that's
it.
Not a good one. In a Spartan race?
No, this was many years ago. Yeah,
skateboarding without a helmet, like I used to do.
You're not far off. I was big on skateboarding at this time, but no, I was just playing on a neighborhood basketball hoop with some friends, and the wind blew, and the entire permanent fixture fell and landed on top of me.
Oh, wow!
Yeah, no, crazy. So that was like 20 years ago now. The whole thing, the whole gamut, you know, knocked out and brain surgery, plate in my head.
Scare the shit out of your mom.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Absolute hell for my parents for quite a while. So,
wow.
Anyways, back to breaking bones in the zero G environment.
If anyone out there has, you know, broken an arm, right? You put a cast on it, and like, you know, say you have to say it gets smelly in a week, you change the cast, right? Like a week, and like your muscle's gone. You're like, what the heck? You know, why had that happen so fast? Right. You know, I mean, there's different theories there, but you know, if you're not using something, maybe there's something just in our evolutionary biology saying, well, we don't need to send any signal to that. Like, let's send the energy somewhere else because this is obviously in disuse. So if you don't use something, your body will shut it off, right? So it's really, really important just to move more, you know, just to get up and change positions and, you know, just get the gravity on your body. It's good for your bone density. I think it's just good for your brain too.
Right.
You know, and then functional movement wise, you know, when we sit, our hip flexors get tight and almost all of our running activities involve posterior chain, hip extension, glutes. You know, so whenever I'm at a stand-up desk, I got like a chair behind me, so you can just kind of put one foot up in like a Bulgarian split squat. You know, you just hang out on your Zoom call and, you know, and yeah, you're in that position. You can do a few little kind of Bulgarian mini squats. If you had some kettlebells next to you, you could, you know, while you're on a call. But that's just a really good functional exercise.
Yeah.
There may even be something that goes on with proprioception in the feet too. You know, so if your feet are in contact with the ground, you know, bare feet, that's grounding, and there's different people can kind of search that. So, I mean, I think there's real stuff, anti-inflammatory, some of the electromagnetic fields that kind of happen through our meridians when we stand completely bare feet, you know, not shoes or socks or minimal shoes, but completely bare feet does something pretty magical, and everyone experiences something different. But spend a little time in your pure bare feet too every day.
On the earth.
Yeah, even on the ground if you're on a floor, but certainly, you know, outside is really good too.
Right. Yeah, no, it's massively important. And I've talked to Dr. Emily, founder of Nobosso. Just she makes
Emily Sprickle.
Yeah, mm-hmm. The yoga mats with the little like pyramids.
We sell their insoles in my store. I have them in all my shoes. They're wonderful.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. They're awesome. Wonderful. 100%. So, so getting into physical activity a little bit more, and it was interesting because you were saying like when we run, we get into hip extension, and it's like, well, not if we're wearing the shoes that we're all told we're supposed to wear, right? So if we're on that real heel, you know, that high heel, and I've talked a lot on this show just about footwear and how to choose shoes and what to avoid in shoes. If somebody is considering right now, I'm getting quite a few people that are getting back into like regular road marathons. And I know this is, this is a big part of your life. And, it's interesting because obviously my life has been dominated by adventure races and Spartan and obstacle and trail runs. And now kind of coming back, you know, just from a demand standpoint, a lot of my clients are saying, hey, I want to run the San Francisco Marathon. Hey, I want to run the Boston Marathon when it comes back. I want to run this or that. What advice would you give somebody that's maybe been in this, you know, this COVID dormitory type environment that now is saying to themselves, I want to get back out there. I want to start running. And maybe they ran a marathon 7 years ago, but, you know, now they're feeling, you know, maybe they're a little depressed. Maybe they're a little out of shape. They've been sitting on their butt for 6 months watching Netflix with lockdown and whatnot. What advice would you give them if they were going to get back into running tomorrow?
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, building fitness is one day at a time, and you meet yourself where you are, and you're teaching. Like, we talk about being metabolically broken. So we basically, the first step is get people metabolically well. Right. You know, so if they're 25 and otherwise well, they can start right out, start walking, jogging. They can use fat as fuel. They're not inflamed. Their cardiovascular risk is low. But if you took the average 60-year-old now, considering most already have some spectrum of pre-diabetes, you know, these folks have to also work on the diet if they're in that spectrum, meaning, you know, fix that, because then your body makes energy. So people, you know, as you've witnessed, Joe, if they're fatigued all the time and they're storing energy and they can't make energy, they don't really feel like going outside. So they'll be able to extract a little willpower for a few weeks, but ultimately they'll just not want to wake up and run or lift or go to the gym. But when we fix people, you know, you get them more well, get them off the sugar. They can use fat as fuel. People wake up and want to move, right? They wake up and run it because they're making energy. It's crazy. It's like you're a tanker truck, like a gas truck, right? You're carrying around 10,000 gallons of petrol and you got a little diesel tank. And you run out of gas, that's someone who's broken, right? They're just storing. But when you actually can access the, you know, the big petrol tank that's getting insulin down, then they're in the right space. And start at a conversational pace. You know, so if they're breathing up in a level that they can't talk, they're going too hard. And a simple way to think about that physiologically is we exhale CO2. Okay, so carbohydrate metabolism produces more CO2. So we want people to be able to oxidize fats when they're starting their exercise activity, not just like gas burn. This is like electric battery burn. But if they're in the wrong zone to start, right? They're just burning through carbs, and it's not the way to build fitness. You know, this goes back to old Lydiard methods, you know, just that base training. Everyone knows what base training, zone two, you know, for the people that read the books. Yeah, that's that zone that you could stay all day. So and most people, it's walking because they want to run, right? But as soon as they run, so then they got to start walking first and maybe run a minute walk. So be prepared to start slow, you know, so you can do it the next day. And little by little, you add a stress, you adapt, get stronger, add another little stress, adapt, but have the long view. So if you've been, you know, 10 years without exercise, I would say the 2022 marathon, you know, is what you're, you know, start with a 5K, right? There's no health benefit from running a full marathon, really, over running a 5K or 10K. You know, that first half hour is outside is where you get the most bang for the buck. But some people need a bigger carrot. They, you know, they want to get a bigger hairy goal, but knock off the safe, healthy goals first and go, you know, too much of anything, they'll break and hurt themselves. And that's no good either.
I love that. You know, so it's like a law of diminishing returns coming from the guy that's, how many times have you run Boston?
Gosh, like 30. I just signed up this week to go run again.
Yeah.
Cause they're going to have it in person in October this year.
Oh my gosh. That's
I haven't amazing. Run like a road race. I've done some trail ultras and stuff during COVID. Those things stayed open, but anything else has been locked down.
Right. So a guy that's run the Boston Marathon over 30 times is saying there's no health benefit beyond the 5K. Really? It's like a lot of
diminishing
return.
Yeah, there really isn't. But we all like just getting in the game, right? Really why we do this stuff is it's not at a certain point. It's just, this is our thing, right? We just like getting out there a couple times a year and mixing it up.
Right.
But show up in a healthy state, you know, just show up healthy and you'll finish the race.
Right. Just before this podcast, I was on the phone with a coaching client and, he said, "Hey Joe, like, you know, I've been doing my program and you know, today my glutes and hamstrings and calves are just really sore." And part of me was like, "Well, that's actually great news. You know, I'm like, you know, whatever you did, you know, the warm up exercises
sure. working the right
No, I was like, "Yeah, that's great.
Hold their glutes. That means you're engaging the right muscles."
Right. Like he was doing hills and stuff. So
if your shins hurt, that's a different story.
Right, exactly. But it was funny too, because he's supposed to be doing nasal breathing. And so he said to me, "Joe, you know, should I do the, you know, some extra glute stretches and extra hamstring stretches today because my stuff's sore?" I'm like, "Yeah, you can do whatever you want, but it actually means you ran too hard." So right now we're in this state of if you're getting that sore after the workout, chances are, and sure enough, I was like, you know, where was your heart rate at during this workout? Because if you're doing, you know, the nasal breathing program at the volumes that we're doing, I'd be really surprised if you were as sore as you're suggesting, right? Because he's been training hard for a while. So it was just
he stepped out of the nasal breathing there.
Exactly.
So,
and sure enough, and his heart rate, was like 175.
And, it's like, wait, you're not nasal breathing there.
Right, exactly. Can you talk about that a little bit just in terms of, because like I said, sure enough, you know, he's 180 minus age is where he's kind of supposed to be. And sure enough, he was way outside of that on this workout 2 days ago. And how could what I'm kind of explaining here occur? So for a layman that may be listening, how did I know that he was just running too hard at a too high of an intensity? What is the carbohydrate burning doing to our physiology that could conceivably cause more muscle damage?
I don't think it's necessarily the carb burning, but that he, you know, I believe in high intensity training. I mean, in short bursts, it's powerful. It's how we keep our speed, keep our neuromuscular, you know, it's powerful for metabolic health, you know, so
yeah.
People have 7 minutes and they can't hurt themselves, you know, if they can do some high intensity just for that, for metabolic health, that's a good thing. But if your heart rate's 175, I mean you're lighting matches, right? you're burnt. But and again, for how long was he at that zone? Because I'm sure he was not able to carry on a conversation there, because when you're fat metabolizing, your CO2 production is less. You know, in exercise physiology, it's called a respiratory exchange ratio, where carbohydrates are 1. And fat metabolism, pure fat metabolism, is like a 0.7. So you don't produce as much carbon dioxide. And when the carbon dioxide is what makes us need to breathe faster, because we have to blow it off. So we produce water and carbon dioxide with carbohydrate metabolism, and it produces really fast. So building fitness is, you know, all through the history of coaching lore, it's like, you know, 80-20, right? 80% in the zone 2 aerobic zone that builds mitochondria, builds capillaries, builds the engine. And you want that engine to be able to use, you know, for an analogy, gas and electric, meaning electric being the the fat burning and the gas being the carbs. So you build a big engine that can use both. So first you got to build the big engine through a lot of activity. You know, this is why the Kenyans just crush it. They've been running to school their whole life. So when they finally decide to line them up in a race, they have, you know, at age 15 or something, right? They've got 5 years of high altitude endurance training, carrying like school books.
And they just tell them they're late for school and they're off.
Yeah. And then they go play soccer, you know, so they develop their speed and neuromuscular. But, and that's the safest place, you know, because the last thing we want is to take someone with unknown cardiovascular risk, which is a large number of people. People have no idea they're at cardiovascular risk. You know, I see them every day, right? Well, my cholesterol's fine or something, and they're loaded with plaque. You know, you don't want them to do like super intense, stressful things, because that's how people rupture plaques. And especially dudes, because they're more type A in their exercise approach. You know, so we want safety first. Younger people obviously would not have that issue, you know, high school kids. But for if you're working with aging athletes or clients or patients, you know, it's that old cardiac rehab where you walk first, then you jog. But just get people able to comfortably jog 30 minutes a day, you know, which could be a walk too. But then that's the most, like you say, diminishing returns after that. But some people just find religion, right? They find that this is so good for their brain. They love it that they'll go. You know, they get to that 30 minutes and like, okay, I want to go do a 10K or something. I just love being out there. Is it, they sort their lives out, you know, in that time. Absolutely. They're running or at the gym.
Right.
Or out in nature, you know, that's powerful too. Just being outside is powerful.
Well, that was another thing you wrote about in the book is just this. I think you referenced a study where people walked. I think they walked either in an urban environment or they walked out in nature for an hour or two. And the group that walked out in nature had significantly improved mood and reduced depressive symptoms and whatever they were looking at. You know, it's been a while since I've gone through that section in the book, but I remember that you had referenced that like we're all moving into cities, maybe not post COVID. I think everyone's moving to Denver or something or Austin. But for the last decade or so, we've been all moving into cities. But it's actually less healthy for us than just getting out into some green nature.
Yeah, and cities have, like Austin's got that beautiful trail system down by the river, and it's packed with people. You know, because they somehow it draws you there. I mean, I don't think you need a scientific study to tell you I could exercise in a closed box without windows, or I could walk outside through some trees. So, you know, do your own experiment and see how you feel. And the book that really goes into the science was called The Nature Fix, Florence Williams. And she spent like 10 years traveling to all these places, hooking up brain electrodes and drawing, you know, hormonal levels on people, studying, you know, what's called like forest bathing, you know, like in all the urban areas now, they're building these little parks. You know, it's really prevalent over in Asia, you know, where they overwork people to death, right? They really, worse than here. I mean, they overwork people to death and, you know, to the point that they crack, right? So they're all these little urban parks, like even some little green space within an urban place, like the cities that people are drawn to now are the cities. Like I lived in Denver for 5 years, one block from Washington Park, which is this wonderful little oasis, and it would just draw people. And I never got tired. You know, I would run this little 2.5 mile dirt loop, you know, probably thousands of times, you know, in my 5 years, one block off. And it never felt like going anywhere else because it was just happy. You know, you just saw people and trees. It would be like if in New York City, you know, Central Park is just, it's magical. Just
right.
You just gravitate to there. Like even if you're on a couple day trip, you just somehow find your way to the park on your run and your mood changes like immediately when you hit that, you know, right. Hit that border where you're not like hearing cars, you know, or having to time a light, you know, looking to your right and your left. You're like, I can just chill now.
Right. No, oh my gosh. No, it makes total sense to me. And not to be conspiratorial or anything, but I think it's interesting because you're an MD, and I think that analogy of comparing over the last year or so, I think that that's a decent analogy for how I've felt that maybe conventional medicine was looking at our immune health or public health, or speaking of kind of the emotional side of lockdowns, that comparison of obviously it's not the same to be walking outside versus on a treadmill in a white-walled building, right? So in other words, sometimes I feel like the mainstream narrative around health, it's actually suggesting in some capacity as an analogy that it's the same. Does that make any sense? Sometimes yeah. I feel like the way we're looking at the immune system or the way that we're looking at, you know, the benefits of lockdowns or the benefits of masks, you know, we're in the business of smiles and hugs. That's what we like to say because our Runga events bring people together. And so sometimes I think I think of it in that way that it's like, no, but there's it's obviously healthy for us to see smiles. It's obviously more healthy for us to be outdoors, like when the beaches were closed in California. It's like, this doesn't make sense.
It makes no sense.
It makes no sense. But I think that that comparison of running outside in nature, in the sun, barefoot, versus running on a treadmill in a white-walled insane asylum, they're saying, well, look at the physiology of both. It's the same. It's even. Right? Does that make any, am I making any sense or am I just rambling?
No, there's actually, if you look, I mean, I had a little slide, I wrote an article that got published on COVID and the immune system and metabolic health. But if you just, I had a slide that I shared through a running store. It was called, you know, stay away from people, run outside, want to build your immune system, run outside. You know, it's like everything that you do to protect yourself from COVID would be running outside. You know, when our bodies are exposed to the environment, to dirt, to, you know, the air outside versus inside, this is how you stay well and you don't get COVID. So not just from the lack of exposure, but your body builds, you know, to the best vaccine is a healthy immune system. I mean, because the next virus will come along. So if you don't have a healthy you, like a healthy host, you know, you're vulnerable to whatever comes down the pike. You know, I got my vaccine and I'm all for it, but you know, we'll probably need a new one next winter, you know, a new variant, but you're still vulnerable to other things. So build your immune system. But yeah, just like the smiles and hugs, you know, there's all these positive endorphins and endocannabinoids and oxytocin. These are chemicals made, you know, in our body that create this health, right? The serotonin is contentment, and the drug companies are trying to make wonderful pills that might be able to do a little bit of that. But, you know, if you are in a contentful place in your life with friends and, you know, your tribe, you got like a fire hose of serotonin, not like a little garden hose that the pharma agent might give you or might not at the cost of side effects. So it's all good. There's no downside. You know, there's absolutely no downside to, and then it's got, you know, do what's joyful. But I think, you know, if you are really confined, you can't get outside, certainly all movement's good. You know, use your indoor space, use your treadmill when you need to, but then get outside. That's a means to stay well enough so when the weather's good, you can get outside.
Right. And that's one thing.
Go on a long full-day Appalachian Trail hike, but if you're not fit or well, you know, you'll tucker out and it'll suck, right? You'll be like, oh, I don't like this.
Right. And that's been the one thing I've just wished that, you know, like we talked about with your farmer's market, double food stamp. It's just, I feel like there's been a massive deficit of quality information around how we eat, how we move, the rate of obesity in COVID patients, et cetera. And I'd love any further thoughts that you have on that as we kind of come up against time. But I'm also curious, I know you mentioned you got the vaccine. What are you doing kind of in concert with that? You know, so in other words, you're supporting your body's innate immune system and you're doing the pharmaceutical approach. So what is your total strategy kind of look like?
Yeah, so a healthy human, you know, that can use fat as fuel. So we have an innate and adaptive immune response, and then we have this inflammatory response. But when people are in this insulin-resistant, hyperinsulinemic state, metabolic state, so that, for one, our blood vessels are damaged, so the receptors that can actually, that COVID can be attracted to and enter, or so you've got this open gateway, so the unwell people have an open gateway. And then their blood vessels aren't healthy, so they end up with this storm, this inflammatory storm that happens kind of after the viral exposure and the viral replication. So that's happening at about peak in 3 to 4 days, 8 days. There's no more viral replication, but I'm in a hospital here. There's people been in this hospital for 4 weeks, right? So this inflammatory response, so your own innate immune system is not getting that virus when it's replicating. And then the body's response to that virus, it's like a fire, you know, not just a little fire in the fireplace, you know. So the most of the well people who get COVID, yeah, they feel a little grumpy for a few days, and then it's fine, but then they're okay. But, you know, if you're unwell, and then that adaptive immune response, which is the later, which we really want from a vaccine, we don't know yet, you know, is giving the vaccine, you know, to otherwise well people who have probably a better adaptive immune response. Is that vaccine going to work in someone who's unwell? We don't know that yet. We'll have to wait and see. We know from other viruses, this adaptive immune response from flu vaccines tend not to work as well in people who don't have well-functioning immune systems. That shouldn't be too surprising. So if there's any message, we could share on show notes a paper Nina Teicholz and I wrote that was published maybe 2 months ago, you know, on the whole pathway of what happens with COVID if you have poor metabolic health. So my plea to, you know, the policymakers is now's the time to lock down sugar, right? Yeah. Let's quarantine junk food. So
quarantine junk food.
Yeah, to create well people, because this ain't going away. Right? Let's build healthier people before the next, how many waves are we at, Joe? This,
depending I lost on
what
count.
You read and what media outlet, we're on the 50th wave and whatever people have nothing to write about, there's another wave. Yeah. So the waves will come. You know, now India is a mess, and metabolic illness and diabetes is a disaster in India. Brazil's a mess with COVID. So the populations that aren't well, you know, internationally have the worst outcomes with COVID, not just test result positives. We're talking about people in hospitals and dying. You know, so those pockets in the planet where people are not well, those countries suffer dearly.
Well, and I know we're up against time here, but in terms of, you know, looking at COVID numbers and looking at the rates of obesity and comorbidities and also vitamin D deficiency and whatever else, you know, you've seen, I think you just alluded to the less well you are, even the less effective the vaccine will be.
Yeah, we don't know 100%, but if you look at past vaccines for viruses,
right?
Yeah, so that's probably true.
In terms of this virus, where, you know, it doesn't seem like, in other words, we have any path except we need to quarantine sugar, we need to quarantine junk food.
Get your sorry butt healthier.
Right, yeah, exactly.
That's you.
There's no get out of jail free card.
For Pfizer to save your life, right?
Because right.
It might, but take, you have skin in the game, you know?
Right.
Do yeah. your part and yeah, we'll see where it all goes. But right. No kidding. And the UK made a really big public push, you know, for addressing obesity in national policy. Boris Johnson got COVID and then, you know, he was obese. And so he's lost some weight, lost some stones, they call it over there. And
but I think he said to start lower fat. Like, I remember that.
Yeah,
I don't think
the science right.
Right.
Again, that's why that UK policy paper.
Yeah.
But Matthew Hancock is the public health guy. And he lost a couple stone on low carb, and he's been, you know, you can just type in, you know, Matthew Hancock or Boris Johnson, low carb, or Asim Malhotra. So they understand it, but then they got to get all their public health people on board. Like, if you're to pick one approach that's going to help the most, right, help the most. If you look at diabetes, it's a problem with regulating glucose. So the simplest solution is don't eat glucose, you know, starch, sugar, whole grain, like that's your problem. Doesn't mean they're bad foods. If you're not healthy, your body can't, you're allergic to them in essence, right? That's as simple as that. So you can't medicate your way. It's weird that that's so out there to people. All they need to put is a glucose monitor on their arm and they'll see immediately. We have a right. clinical trial going on now where we're enrolling patients, new diabetes patients, and treating them with nutrition and a glucose monitor and making their diabetes go away.
It's amazing.
Because it works. So, right. yeah. But you need more data just to show what the barriers are and just to convince people that, yes, we can treat this without meds from day one.
Wow.
But people need feedback. You know, if they don't have any information, they don't have anything that tells them what their sugar is, and then they're flying blind, right? They don't have an instrument panel. They don't know where they're going.
Right. Do you use metformin or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. And some patients, that's a powerful first start.
Yeah.
You know, that one's complementary to helping the insulin resistance. But once you're giving them things that create more insulin, like injecting them with insulin, they're getting sicker, you know, while their sugar might get lower. So we want to reduce the insulin load first, whether it's the insulin they're making themselves or the amount they're injecting. Now, some people ultimately need insulin because their pancreas is burned out. And then you give them just a little bit, just enough, but they don't need big gorilla doses. That means their body doesn't see it. They're just storing 24/7, right? We talked about that. Then they're not healthy. They can't use fat as fuel, and they're tired all the time, and they wonder why, and we're giving them big doses of insulin at night. It's like it doesn't work to make people healthy.
All right. I know we're over time here. This is the last quick question. What is your general recommendation for protein? Do you have like 100 grams a day?
Oh,
is
yeah,
it
that's
a percentage of
question.
Ideal body weight?
Yeah. And there's one good article you could look up. It's called Protage, Protage. I think it's from Belgium, actually.
Okay.
So if you look at let's look at the population that we're most concerned about, which would be people over 50 to prevent what's called sarcopenia. You know, I'm 54, so this is me, right? So I'm worried. I want to keep my muscle. That's my pension plan. So if you're an active person over 50, you probably need 1.3 to 1.5 gram per kilo of lean body mass. You know, so what does that look like? You know, so say I'm like a 70 kilo dude. It's about my weight, somewhere around there, maybe a little less if you look at lean mass. So 1.5, so I'm just round number, but I'm shooting for about 100 grams a day. You know, so what does that look like? You know, so no one really counts stuff, but I get these big farm eggs. That would be like 3+ farm eggs in the morning, which is my breakfast mixed with cheese and meat. So that's probably like easily 30+. You know, every meal you want like real protein, right? Not just a little palm. You want like a whole hand. The more active you are, the more you need. It's going to be your fish, your meat, your eggs, maybe some cheese, full fat dairy. But yeah, a lot of people are just protein insufficient. And they'll get frail.
Right.
The more active you are, and certainly if you're sick with some type of catabolic illness, you need more protein. The more active, if you got any condition.
So if someone's metabolically deranged, do you kind of put them at that same 1.5,
1.4? Yeah. Unless they have really end-stage renal disease, this would be the only group not to do that. But most, if you have normal kidney function, you don't have to worry that protein is going to hurt your kidneys. Diabetes will hurt your kidneys, so get rid of the diabetes. Yeah, so those people really, to get the weight down, it's going to be a little bit higher protein, certainly low carb, and a little bit lower on the fat, because the fat's got more calories, not quite as satiating. It's too delicious sometimes, you know, so yeah, it does, like if it's too delicious, you'll eat a lot of it. You know, so things like fat bombs and that people want to push out is like healthy low carb. If you're trying to lose weight, you know, it's like fool's gold. It's
5,000 calories.
I would eat a whole low carb cheesecake and have another one. And I would not lose weight doing that.
Yeah.
Neither would have patients.
So. Junk keto. All right. Sorry. One more question. I know you got to go here. I'm robbing you.
Yeah, I got another call in, but this is cool. This has been great, Joe. I appreciate
carbs. What's your like bottom? Is the bottom zero for carbs, or is it 25, or is it 50? How low do you go on carbs?
Yes, I don't have people count, but you know, I mean, if someone really wants to do this full carnivore zero for a while, if they're metabolically broken and they feel good, and they want to do that, that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. But most people, I want them to throw some plants into things. You know, human beings were designed to eat plants and animals. I think that's how we got here. And they're non-starchy plants. You know, so certainly you're going to make an omelet, throw some veggies in there. You know, throw your meat on a salad, have some side Brussels sprouts. Last night I roasted cauliflower with cheese. You know, you have to eat that stuff. That's good fiber, and that fiber feeds those 6 trillion bacteria in your intestines, you know, so there is some role for that, and it's delicious. So, but again, like it's individual choice.
Yeah.
If they stay to, you know, the animal products and those non-starchy vegetables, they'll get low enough carb to burn body fat.
Got
it. Unless they're snacking on the side. Very hard to overeat broccoli. So,
right. But
yeah, I mean, I think you'd look at the results. People that want to do like full lockdown, zero carb, there's nothing unhealthy about that. You know, that we know, certainly in the short term, if they have diabetes and it makes it go away, and then add stuff back later, whatever gets them off the addictive sugar, I could care less what they do. You know, just get off the junk.
Makes total sense to me. And I personally love that, because I think so many people want to know, like, how many grams of protein, how many grams of carbs, how many grams of fat? And then they make it this whole like science experiment every
meal.
You
don't need a spreadsheet.
Yeah, no, it's like just...
You should be full, and if you're hungry, you're going to eat. So whatever you're doing, if you're not satiated, you're doing it wrong.
Right. Well, hey, words of wisdom. Dr.
Work
Mark.
With people that can help you No, this is great, and we can do a follow-up at some point with some other topic.
Yeah, we'll just keep this. We'll just hit pause.
Great to reconnect after 5 years. Remember, we had so many common things we had both read, and you're like, yeah, that's when we met up in Massachusetts.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, hey, I'll see you again, I'm sure, sometime soon. And as the world, you come down to Austin, come on by, you know, we'll do a workout or go on a run or whatever you want to do. Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
All right, Mark. Thanks so much. Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed today's show. For the show notes for today's episode, head on over to CoachJoeDI.com and click podcast from the menu. If you'd like to leave a review, which I would absolutely appreciate on iTunes or Stitcher, wherever you found this show, please do so. These mean the world to me. They help me understand what my audience is gaining from these shows that I'm pouring my heart into, and ultimately helps us to reach more people because these platforms like shows that get reviews. So it helps us out so much. If you're digging the shows, this would be so great if you could just leave a review. Also, I still give away $150 every 2 weeks to kettlebellkings.com to somebody that reviews my show. So if you leave a review, just screenshot it and email it to hey@coachjoedi.com, and my team will enter you to win this $150 gift card so that you can outfit your home with a couple of kettlebells on me. Also, when you're in the show notes, you'll find links to any products that we discussed. For full transparency, some of these links do contain affiliate links. This helps me to fund these episodes, pay my staff, and ensure that I'm taking care of the people that take care of us. So I absolutely appreciate you clicking links and using codes. It helps keep this train on the tracks. All right, guys, until next week, thank you as always for listening. I really appreciate you guys subscribing and listening to this show every week. I really put a lot into them, so thank you so much. And you'll hear from me again next week. Take care.